Welcome to another podcast edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. We're still in startup mode, and I appreciate the financial assistance I've gotten from many supporters. Today, I want to single out two Deborahs, Deborah Newell of Woodland Hills, California, and Deborah Gordon, she spells it a little differently, from San Francisco. They dug into their wallets and kicked in a little cash to get the Peter B. Collins Show up in this podcast mode, and I'm very grateful. You can help, too. Go to my website at peterbcollins.com and click on the tab that says, You Can Help. Today, I'm pleased to present the second in a series of powerful interviews co-hosted with Sibel Edmonds. For more information on this series, go to the website 123realchange.blogspot.com. That's 123realchange.blogspot.com. Today, our conversation is with former NSA, and he worked for other intelligence agencies too, Russell Tice. He was the first to go public and disclose that American journalists were being eavesdropped on, surveilled, by the so-called Terrorist Information Program. So I hope you listen carefully to the comments he offers and give me your feedback. My email is peter@peterbcollins.com. Welcome to Boiling Frogs.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guy's lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor, the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows.
Everybody knows. What do they? NSA's illegal domestic wiretapping, FBI's national security letters, state secrets privilege, TSA's 1 million-plus no-fly list, persecution of government whistleblowers, perpetual wars, rendition and torture. Can you feel the water boiling? Welcome to the Boiling Frogs.
Welcome to this edition of the Boiling Frogs with Sibel Edmonds. I'm Peter B. Collins. Our guest today is Russell D. Tice, a former intelligence analyst for the U.S. Air Force, the Office of Naval Intelligence, the Defense Intelligence Agency, and the National Security Agency. During his nearly 20-year career with various U.S. government agencies, he conducted intelligence missions related to the Kosovo War, Afghanistan, the USS Cole bombing in Yemen, and the invasion and occupation of Iraq. In December 2005, Tice helped spark a national controversy over claims that the NSA and the DIA were engaged in unlawful and unconstitutional wiretaps on American citizens. Russ Tice, welcome to the Boiling Frogs.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
And Sibel, tell us how you and Russell Tice connected.
Sure. Welcome, Russ. Good to have you with us. Russ and I met during the early stage of my whistleblower organization's congressional activities, Peter. And he was one of the very few people who actually showed up during that appellate court hearing for my case, which was the last minute close to the public and the reporters. And Russ was one of the few people who was outside waiting for me to come out and do my little press brief after that appellate court hearing session. And he joined our organization, the Whistleblowers Organization, National Security Whistleblowers Coalition. And he's been very, very active with all the congressional rallies that we held. And he's been actually one of my most active members when it comes to the issues that deals with the whistleblowers and the legislations and, et cetera.
And Russ, give us a quick description of where you are today. What are you doing, and how has your life changed?
Well, it's changed quite a bit. I mean, before, obviously I was an intelligence officer, and it wasn't like, I was disgruntled, as some of these bloggers like to say. I was actually considered you know, one of the more efficient officers in my field, and was doing quite well with the supervisors and folks that I worked with. The problem was I was apparently butting heads with folks at much higher levels. You know, ultimately, when I started finding things out, I tried to use the internal system to try to bring these things up, and they basically took the chain of command and wrapped around my throat and choked me with it. Ultimately, NSA fired me. I was out of work for a while. Then I picked up a job as a contractor working for the Department of the Army as a space systems analyst, just basically with a secret clearance, which is much lower than what I used to work with, you know, basically protecting our troops in the field. As soon as NSA found out that I was working with a secret clearance, they immediately put something in my security file. To this day, I don't know what that was, to have me fired from that job. You know, not that the NSA cared that I was actually, you know, helping, making sure our soldiers in the field weren't coming home in boxes. NSA didn't care about that. They just wanted to make sure they fired me from that job. So I'm unemployed once again and looking for a job and or looking to go back to school and maybe get a PhD and become a college professor. Right now, I'm sort of in flux limbo land right now.
Russ, I chose the Boiling Frogs as the name of this show for obvious reasons. You also are known to frequently offer the boiling frog analogy when it comes to the state of our nation since 9/11. Now, as a former NSA intelligence analyst and capabilities operations officer, specializing in all aspects of our offensive information warfare, can you please tell our listeners why you use the analogy and how do you see the state of our nation today?
Well, you know, I learned the boiling frog analogy, I think, when I was in college from probably a professor or somewhere or another. But it's basically you put a frog in a very, nice environment of water, and the frog swims around. He's very happy. The only problem is the frog is in a big pot of water on a stove, and then all of a sudden someone starts to turn up the volume or the heat on the stove very, very slowly, and the frog swims around happily until the frog doesn't realize what happens to him, and he's frog soup. So it's sort of.
How does that relate to the state of our nation today?
Well, I think it relates to the frog is the American people right now. The American people are swimming in that pot of water. The temperature is being turned up, and Americans are you know very happily, you know, spending their time, you know, obsessed with you know hours of coverage on Michael Jackson funerals and Paris Hilton and Britney Spears and all kinds of other things.
And hey, don't forget the Octomom and American Idol.
Octomom, American Idol, and you know all sorts of things of that nature that I think in the long run they really don't mean a whole lot. You know, especially when the American people are being fried in the process and they don't even realize it. So it's just something that it's sort of, and obviously the press would not be covering these things if the American people didn't, you know, turn the channel from something that's, you know, interesting, like, you know, a coup in Honduras or a civil war in Mogadishu or issues like that, and turn the Octomom on because that's what they care about. So it's, you know, you can't blame the press totally or, you know, the politicians, because ultimately, you know, you kind of get what you deserve when you don't care who you're putting in on the Hill in Washington, D.C.
And Russ, if you'll indulge me for a moment, I have a pet theory here about why the American people have been so passive. And it might surprise you or others to hear this, but I think it is the sophistication of market research. And that, for example, the television networks have done detailed studies on the attitudes of the American public. And they find that people are more interested in the controversy over the legitimacy of the vote for American Idol. They're much more interested in that than whether Ohio in 2004 or Florida in 2000 or even Iran in 2009 were the scenes of hijacked elections. And the networks, the advertisers have such detailed understanding of what makes us tick, what draws us to the tube and makes us stay there and unable to switch away. And so much of it has nothing to do with reality, the true reality, and with the serious problems that we face as a nation.
Well, you know, I guess marketing's part of that, but, you know, why is it that the American people find, you know, the controversy over whether some silly TV program voting thing was fixed or not, versus something that really mattered, whether a president was put in office and unjustly, you know, put there. If I recall, you know, way back when the Greeks tried to, you know, start a republic, they had to, you know, chalk people's togas to try to get them into a courtroom to, you know, to try people because people didn't want to perform their duties as citizens. So it's apparently it's not something that's new. Now, ultimately, we know what happened to Greece, and we know what happened to the Roman Republic after that. So, you know, I kind of wonder, are we headed for the same sort of fate?
Well, that actually brings it to my next question. I just posted a piece on the police state. It's called The Making of a Police State. Aren't we there? So is the water boiling, Russ? Are we there? Because a lot of people say we are getting there. We are on our way to get there. We are getting close, as if there is this clearly defined area. So what do you think? Is the water boiling?
Well, I don't think the water is boiling yet. And the reason I say that is because we're allowed to talk the way we're talking right now, and whatever limited coverage our speak today might get, you know, out there in the airwaves or on the computer, we're allowed to do that. The water is really going to be boiling when we have this discussion, and the day after we disappear, and all mention of what we've said ends up in a memory hole somewhere that. That we'll never see the light of day. So I don't think we're there yet. I think we can save ourselves. I think our you know, Ben Franklin, when he said to the lady, you know, if you choose to protect it, meaning protect your democratic republic, I think we can. But we need to wake up now. And if we don't wake up now, it's not going to be too long. You know, NSA. You know, I said on the TV a couple months ago that NSA doesn't have the capability to tap and listen to everyone's and cover, collect every conversation in the United States. That capability will probably happen within the next 10 to 15 years, that every communication in this country will be able to be collected and cataloged and digitally warehoused. If we don't stop things now, that will be a reality 10 to 15 years from now, and soon after that, we're doomed.
Now, Russ, I watched with great interest your interviews with Keith Olbermann earlier in 2009, in fact, right after the inauguration of the new administration. And it really encouraged me to see the strength that you showed in coming forward and telling us that what you knew was that media representatives, reporters, editors, and others in the industry were targeted. And you described that internally it was characterized as, well, we're walling these people off. They're sacrosanct. The First Amendment and our other laws, including the Fourth Amendment, preclude us from monitoring their conversations and surveilling their emails. But what you described to us was that was a pretext, and that, in fact, a great deal of collection has occurred on media individuals. Talk a little bit about that and the response to it.
Well, I really can't go too much into detail of how that was happening, because I would start to give hints as to what sort of technology was being used, and ultimately, you know, what sort of other things were being targeted. That collection that was happening was just a support element for something that I was working on. So basically, we were saying we're going to make sure these people we're not going to do anything to these folks, and we're going to segment them from my mission that involved information warfare. So you know, when I ultimately found out that information was being collected on those folks, then I went, oh my goodness, and that's when I started. I started very subtly tickling the areas where that was being done and trying to figure out, you know, what was happening with that information. And that's when they figured out that, someone just figured out what was going on, and that's when they came after me. So it was, I can't give out details because of some truly classified programs that really should not be jeopardized.
Understood. But tell me a little bit about the reaction. Were you surprised that, for example, most members of the corporate media, the so-called mainstream media, don't seem alarmed by what you reported? And what we're seeing now is that members of Congress finally seem ready to exercise oversight because there are strong I think it's pretty clear, but they have strong suspicions that the CIA intentionally failed to disclose important programs to them. So now that it's impinging on their turf and their rights, Congress seems willing to exercise oversight responsibilities. But I still see the mainstream media as pretty complacent about what you reported.
Well, I don't know the answer. I thought it would have generated a much bigger response from the mainstream. Perhaps they don't believe me. The folks at NBC told me that I was on two nights. After the first night, they called NSA and asked for response. And NSA's response was, well, you know, we're not going to give you any particular response, but, you know, you've got to understand your source. You know, this guy's not the most stable guy, and, you know, we've had problems there. So, in other words, by discrediting me from the very beginning and saying that I was mentally unstable, you know, that was intentionally done in one respect to make sure that there was always doubt in people's minds as to, oh, you know, this guy's, you know, he's as crazy as a loon kind of thing. You know, it was done on purpose that way, and so you'd have to call the mainstream press folks and ask them why they're not interested, and perhaps maybe it's because of corporate sponsors and corporate defense companies that are involved with some of these communication companies that are worried about their government contracts. I don't know the answer.
Well said, and we will follow up on that. With the latest that came out on Cybercom, Russ, you wrote a piece, and you consider the assertion that Stratcom will be in control of this new Cybercom as complete and utter hogwash. Can you expand on that?
Well, they're talking about supposedly they're going to cybercom or cybersecurity and cyber communications. It obviously is very important. You know, I'm not saying, oh my goodness, you know, we should not protect our cyber communications, because that would be rather silly. You know, we know that our country is attacked by entities, whether they're supported by countries or not. We, you know, that's speculative, or some people do know whether it's coming from China or Russia or North Korea or wherever. But you know, to give that capability to NSA, well, actually, they're saying they're going to send it to a strategic command in Nebraska. Well, you know, Nebraska does not have the capability to do that. And even General or the Admiral Jones or whoever said, oh, yeah, well, NSA has a bunch of really smart people that know computers. Well, they do. Oh, they certainly do. They know so much about computers that they could take that capability, use the information warfare capability along with it, and not only be able to tap everyone's computers, which they've already done, by the way, but also be able to inject information warfare capabilities within the capability to tap everyone's computer. And that is just, considering NSA's, what I would think, lack of credibility in the crimes they've committed against the American people, is very scary. NSA should not be trusted, not at all. And we've shown that the Congress has shown, and our current president has shown, that they're not willing to bring forth the oversight that was lacking in the last administration. So here we have a rogue agency, NSA. They've lied to the American people. They've committed crimes against the American people. This most recent IG report that's out, let me tell you, that's probably a watered down and whitewashed as can be. That's not going to tell you the true truth. So, you know, why would we trust NSA in the future to have responsibilities in a field that that is a lot more dangerous than collecting and warehousing communications.
Now, Russ, what you just described, the ability to tap into individual personal computers, is that under the Echelon program?
I can't go into details on...
Okay, that's public information going back a few years, so...
Well, that's speculation is what that really is.
Okay, I'll leave it at that. But if, for example, Jim Bamford, in his book, The Shadow Factory, and James Bamford was our guest on our first Boiling Frogs episode, he described the massive collection of telecommunications and email. And so my question would be, if they already have all my phone calls, my phone records that they can data mine, my banking records that they can data mine, and they're able to intercept email traffic and also, using my IP address, find out what websites I have visited, and possibly with a cooperation of Google, they could find out what topics I've searched, why would they also need to be able to access my computer? What additional functionality would that give?
That would be involved with some programs that are highly classified that I cannot discuss, that involve information warfare.
Okay. Jim Bamford also reported that there are two companies with ties to the Israeli security structure, Naris and Verint, that supply some of the hardware and software for the intercepts that Bamford describes in his book. Do you have any comment on that relationship? Number one, that we outsourced some very critical and highly sensitive tasks. And number two, that by doing that with Israel, which of course is seen as, the factor, the provocative factor for many of the problems that we have with Middle Eastern nations. What is your comment on the role that those Israeli companies play in our security efforts over the last 10 years?
Well, you know, it's not uncommon, unfortunately, that we're starting to outsource critical capabilities in some of our technical systems. Not just are we going to Israeli companies, but we're going to Taiwan to have some of our critical microchips being developed and sent there that go into defense systems and intelligence systems capabilities. And we're even getting things from, China. And so we're basically outsourcing a lot of these things to other people. Yes, Israel's one of them. Now, Israel is considered one of our allies, which I would think is a good thing. Now, the other problem was, we know that China is number one in spying on the United States. But what they don't tell you too often is the number two country that is spying on the United States. Everyone thinks, that has to be Russia. Well, no, it's not Russia. It's actually Israel. So, they're our friends, but they're kind of keeping an eye on us. So it's definitely something to be concerned about. If it was up to me, all critical components for all our critical systems in defense and intelligence would be stamped USA made in the States here with red, white, and blue blooded Americans. I wouldn't have any of it overseas, personally, but the way manufacturing is, we've just outsourced stuff mainly because we don't want to pay Americans a fair wage to do this work, and it can be done a lot cheaper other places.
Russ, you and I spend a lot of time going and knocking on those doors in Congress, whether the Senate or the House, and trying to get their attention to the issues that you were willing to discuss with them within the secure facilities and by congressional committees and members who had the clearance, trying to bring their attention to all these illegalities by the NSA. And we did all that, and lately we found out about one of those representatives, Jane Harman. What was your reaction to that? I mean, here we found out about Harman actually trying to save the NSA. She actually called the New York Times and asked them not to run this story, and so on and so forth. And here is this one representative, one of many, that we try to in quote, inform?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think things are so pervasive that NSA has an awful lot of things on an awful lot of people. Plus, you have representatives that may have been briefed on some of the elements of some of these programs, and now that you know the nasty details are coming out that they ultimately equate to crimes that were committed against the American people. That all of a sudden these people, you know, that may have known, they want to pretend they didn't know and try to do a Pontius Pilate, you know, wash their hands of it. And so they're, in my opinion, a lot of them are afraid that it's going to come out that, you know, that they knew, and or some people may have some dirt on them, sort of like the Hoover and the FBI. And let me tell you, NSA operates the same way. NSA security office is vicious, and when they get a hold of information, they would blackmail anyone on a heartbeat. So I think some of these politicians are being blackmailed. Some are being paid off by telecommunication companies. For instance, you know, that vote we had last summer, it would be interesting to find out the Democrats that voted for that telecommunications retroactive immunity and how much money the Democrats received versus how much money they'd received from telecommunications companies, you know, in the years past.
Well, Russ, let me just give you a quick snapshot, and this is anecdotal, and it's just an image, a perception. But shortly after the FISA vote that you referred to, where the presidential nominee of the Democrats went back on his promise to vote against it if it included telecom immunity, just a few weeks later, the Democrats gathered in Denver for their national convention to nominate Barack Obama. And one of the biggest sponsors there was AT&T. The credential lanyard that you wore around your neck had the AT&T logo on it. And they had a huge party only for members of Congress. No media and no average delegates were invited on the Monday night of convention week. Was it just business as usual? I can't say. All I can tell you is that the perception is one that leaves me uncomfortable.
Well, you know, also our current president tried to say that they weren't going to take a lot of money from big corporate entities, and, you know, that they were just getting dribs and drabs, $5 checks, $10 checks from average Americans who were excited to have change, you know, that we can believe in and transparency in government. And ironically, I went back 8 years ago and looked at some of George W. Bush's campaign stuff, and you know, I saw change a lot, and I saw transparency a lot, and that sort of thing. And I just, you know, interesting, you know, I shake my head because I was a lifelong Republican until February, when I finally, the stench got so bad that I said enough, and I became an independent because I just could not handle it anymore. So I think hypocrisy is ripe on both sides of the fence. It doesn't matter whether it's a Republican or a Democrat. Capitol Hill is the king, a cesspool hypocrisy of the universe.
Now, you alluded a few minutes ago that because of the pervasiveness of the surveillance, that members of Congress in some cases may be compromised, may be subject to blackmail. Do you have any theories about why Obama did change his intended vote on the FISA amendments in August of 2008? And do you have any sense of why, as a constitutional law professor, he has not really followed through on the expectations of many, including me, that he would try to put us back in conformity with the Constitution?
Well, gee, I mean, you're asking a lot of questions that, you know, I'd have to get my little crystal ball out and look into it and try to, you know, or become clairvoyant or something, or what, a telekinescent or whatever they call that sort of thing. But I kind of think in politically, and he's a political entity, you know, a political being, that he and the Democrats are afraid there could be another attack somewhere in the States. And the Republicans, of course, would clobber them over the head with that immediately. I mean, we're seeing reports now that we've got Republicans that look like they're praying for Osama or company or whoever to blow something up in America so that they can bring back the good old days as far as they're concerned. If that's truly happening, it's just it's astounding. But I think that's a big element of it, and another element of it is, in my opinion, I think President Obama, he has these programs and these bills that he kind of wants to get through, in the foremost probably the health care bill, and he believes that he needs some votes from Republicans, and that he's kind of pandering to the Republicans and ultimately shirking his responsibility as Commander-in-Chief to uphold the rule of law in the process.
Well, Ross, when will these excuses end? I mean, come on. We got the majority in the House. We have the majority Democrats in the Senate. We have the Democratic White House. I mean, what do you mean they are afraid of the Republicans? I mean, is this some kind of an excuse that we have let them use and get by? I mean, in 2006, there were a lot of people celebrating, saying, finally, we got the House back, we got the Senate back, and we are going to see some hearings, we are going to see some accountabilities. And if you remember, and I'm sure you do, we were given all these promises by these Democrats, whether it was Conyers or it was Waxman or it was even Jane Harmon. So they got to be the majority, and it's been 3 years. So I don't think that excuse really does provide any explanation for not doing the right thing, since we have basically the same party both in the White House and in the Congress, both the Senate and the House. So do you really believe that it's the fear of Republicans, Ross?
Well, I go back to my former statement. It's a fear of the Democratic leadership, who may have had knowledge of some of these things, and that destroying their own ability to get reelected in the future, which would stymie those folks from who ultimately determine what's going to be what hearings are going to be held on the Hill. And basically you're preaching to the choir. I agree that these things need to be done. Now, ultimately, what President Obama needs to step up to the plate and be a statesman and not a politician. That's my opinion. I think he's an honorable man, but he's being a politician. He's not doing the right thing. Sometimes, you've got to stand up to the plate, and you've got to say to yourself, this is my responsibility. This is what I was elected to do, and I have to do it, even if it doesn't, fall in line with political strategies and schemes for getting these other programs through or something. Sometimes you just got to stand up and do the right thing. And that's the difference between a great president and just a run-of-the-mill politician who happens to sit in the big White House. The other angle is the base, his base, the people that believe, a lot of these folks are conservatives, too, that believe the Constitution needs to be upheld and needs to be respected, especially his own base needs to say, Mr. President, unless you uphold your responsibilities, that perhaps we're going to run someone else in the next election on the Democratic ticket instead of you. Because otherwise he's just going to just assume that his base is going to be there for him and pander to other folks. Now, that's kind of how I see it. Maybe there's other things in play here, I don't know, but I'm kind of hoping he'll still stand up, and I think he still can. He's been a busy guy with the economy and all these other things. We've heard that Holder's going to potentially maybe look into the torture thing, albeit maybe twisted in its logic, but I think he could still stand up and be a great president.
And, Russ, I share that same hope. I really would like to see this president get a grip, get a real commander-in-chief's grasp over the national security structure. And you described the NSA as a rogue agency. And without asking any sources, methods, or secret issues, can I just get your view? Is it possible for a president, any president, to really rein in what you described as a rogue agency?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, there has to be an investigation as to what happened, a real investigation. I'm not talking about this this half-hearted whitewash deal that we just got from the intelligence community, IGs, by the way, which is sort of like having the Fox do the IG report on what happened to all the hens in the hen house. You know, a real investigation, church-style investigation, has to be done to find out exactly what happened. And without getting into specifics of sources and methods and details of programs, but generalities, the people of the Americans need to know for certain, from a credible source and a president, that these are the things that happened. These are the crimes that were committed against you, American citizens. Now, maybe ask the American citizens or you know, the polls, I assume, at some point would look into this. What are we going to do about it? You know, are you upset, America, or, you know, should we do something about this? The rule of law says it doesn't matter what anyone thinks, that it has to be dealt with. I think America needs to know the crimes that were committed. And just, you know, right now they've got some guy named Russ Tice who everyone, you know, the detractors want to say, oh, he's a crazy disgruntled whatever, which is easy to say when you've got to, you know, basically pull a swift boat job on somebody. But it needs to come. It needs to be done officially, and the American people need to hear it. They need to hear the truth, and then ultimately we can move on once the American people know, you know, what's happened here.
Well, Russ, in my view, you have been smeared, both internally at the your former employer, the NSA, and publicly, since you had the courage to offer the comments you have in public. And I was rereading some of the blog posts and other commentary about you, and most of it is based on whispers and a friend tells me this, and none of it is corroborated or fact-based. And if we could zoom out from the way they treated you and the message of intimidation that it sends to other employees of the NSA and other intelligence agencies, isn't one of the fundamentals here that we have to provide protection for individuals like you who come forward with credible claims of serious violations inside a secret agency, and that process has to be respected? Because what you described as a church-style commission, in my view, could only be effective if people like you are permitted to tell the truth without fear of reprisal.
And that's absolutely correct. Now, you know, I still have sources within NSA. There are very good people that work there that are highly upset of what's happened to their agency that they love. And I'm one of those people that loved NSA and have been working SIGINT since I got out of college. And to see this beautiful lady turned into an ugly, fetid Medusa, you know, is just horrible. There are people that work there that are highly upset. I've talked to some of them, and they're, a lot of them were thinking that Obama was going to come in and that they would be able to speak out and that, you know, the truth would get out and the American people, and we could basically purge NSA of the ugliness that's happened and turn it back into a credible agency that's doing a responsible and critical job for the American people. But, you know, the response I got just not too long ago from all of them was not only no, but hell no, we're not going to come out, because, you know, we've seen nothing from this current administration that's going to protect us, and we have you, Russ, as an example of what's going to happen to us if we do speak up. So, you know, it's hard for me to be upset at my colleagues at NSA who say, you know, no, we can't afford to do that because we got kids and, you know, college to pay for my daughter, or, you know, I got five kids, my wife doesn't work, how am I going to feed my kids? You know, how do you get upset with folks that you know, they cannot speak out because their lives will be destroyed, and they literally, and I was used an example to throw into their face on purpose. So, you know, the answer is, of course, we have to have meaningful protections, and number one of those protections in the intelligence community has to be to protect our security clearances, because that is the number one means today that they go after people.
Well, you said the president's office, Russ, and I would say just boils down to the media. The president worries about his rating, and the congressional members, they worry about their reelection. So who ends up being the key here? It's the mainstream media. And without them doing their jobs, of course you're going to have a president's office that's not going to do anything. And, of course, what we have been seeing with the Congress, and I agree with you on the blackmail angle because, as you know yourself, FBI has been doing this for a long, long time. I know of several, 8, 9 congressional people that we were maintaining files on, the files obtained under FISA on foreign entities. And under those FISA laws, when you get information on U.S. persons, you have two options. You either pursue them criminally by going to the Justice Department and asking for a warrant, separate warrant than FISA, to go and collect legally evidence on those congressional people, any U.S. persons, or you destroy those files. Well, I tell you this, they didn't go after them criminally, and they never destroyed those files, and those were pretty thick files. Okay, whether it's certain congresswoman who's currently serving and has a lesbian relationship, even though she has a husband and 2 grown-up children, and how that is being used against her, can't name names, but of course the state secret's privilege comes into work. But again, it boils down to the mainstream media, because to say that the president should be doing this or the Congress should be doing this, these people, they function only based on sticks and carrots, Russ. And what is the mainstream media doing? I mean, what is it doing?
Well,
you said they have been discrediting you, okay? Well, we have had other people. We have had high-level people from Department of Justice who went and talked to these mainstream media people. They couldn't discredit those people. And what have they done? Didn't they sit on that story for a year and a half? Now, what is the excuse for that, Russ?
Well, you know, someone apparently in the White House went and said, oh, my gosh, this is so horrible for national security, and probably threatened them with other things. But you know, once again, you're talking to the choir. You know, the mainstream media has to step up to the plate, too. You know, this past weekend, I watched Campbell Brown on CNN, and the first, you know, she had a whole weekend, the week in review kind of show, and the whole one-third of it, the beginning, was nothing but Michael Jackson stuff. And on Friday, we had the fact that the IG report, the Intel IG report came out, and it said that there were all kinds of other programs in intelligence that were not covered. Of course, I said this a long time ago, as opposed to what was, you know, the TSP that was brought up. And, of course, we had the issue with Congress, you know, being lied to about probably what's an assassination program. And none of that was covered in this hour-long CNN broadcast. And I just shook my head and said, you know, no wonder. You know, I find BBC World News, and I have a little bit of, oh, finally, I found some decent news to watch. But I have to go. You can't find decent news to watch in this country, that's for sure. So, as far as your question, I don't know the answer, Sibel. I just don't know the answer when the mainstream media doesn't care, and they're so easily persuaded to deep six, you know, things of importance. I don't know the answer.
Neither do I, Russ.
You're listening to The Boiling Frogs. I'm Peter B. Collins with Sibel Edmonds, and our guest is Russell Tice. Russ, would you take a minute or two, please, to describe what really seems like Soviet-style tactics that were used against you? You went to your superiors and offered some information that had concerned you greatly about improper activities going on by a coworker in your agency. And instead of investigating your claims and dealing with them through some sort of a fair process, you became the target. And from what I've read, you were sent to a psychiatrist chosen by the agency, not by you. You, from what I've read, you were not permitted to get a second opinion. And this company shrink essentially wrote you up, and that caused them to pull your security clearance. Do I have that correct?
Well, sort of correct. The question mark with the potential coworker that I thought may have been involved, and I don't know, I didn't know that for sure. She just exhibited all the classic signs of someone who may have been spying for, in this case, China. That issue had taken place 2.5 years prior. So, and basically, it was long gone. So, yes, they whitewashed the whole situation, and I think it was because this young lady's mother was a very high muckety-muck up in the government and had some
ours,
big-time pull.
Ours or theirs?
Our government.
Okay.
And it gets much worse than that. Not only was the mother very high up in our government, but the mother was born in communist China and came here as a young lady, apparently, at a young age. I don't know what status, but I didn't find that out until much later. And the mother came in right at 2 weeks after I made the very quiet report. And this was a DIA, and this was a DIA employee that I was. The mother showed up in our office, which was a very probably the highest classified secure area in the entire DIA was where I worked. And the mother pops in, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, what the heck is this woman doing here? And the mother was there to see her daughter. It was vehement. The daughter was at a meeting at the Pentagon, and I called counterintelligence and said, look, this is crazy. This is highly unusual, and this doesn't smell right at all. And they assured me that it was a coincidence, which, I'm like, yeah, sure. And then soon after that, counterintelligence called me and said, oh, we're stopping the investigation. There's nothing to this. Well, yeah, that whole thing was a whitewash. And like I said, I don't know whether the young lady was involved in espionage or not, but the circumstances were there. But anyhow, when I started getting this, so it's basically two separate things, but when they needed something to throw at me to fire me, they dug back to that incident and said, we're going to use this to say he's crazy. So, it's basically security saying, we need to fire this guy. Normally they'd come up with a security violation. But I was known as Mr. Sheriff in the office. I was so tight with security that, and plus they needed something to discredit me by saying that I was crazy. So they come up with a, and Lord forbid that someone in the intelligence field might think that someone's involved in espionage, and of course that's a they must be crazy because that never happens in the intelligence business. But
Russ, there's another angle here, and the angle that I want you to mention briefly has to do with this doctor that they sent these people that they want to fire or get rid of, the NSA, and how we tried to actually get this guy investigated and have his license pulled. Can you tell us a little bit about this doctor?
Yeah, his name is John Michael Schmidt, and he is sort of like a hatchet man at NSA, and he's done this to numerous people, not just myself. That they've taken numerous people that they want to screw over, and they send them to this guy, and he's their hatchet man who will declare them nuts. This guy, interestingly enough, when they did it to me, I had already been for my routine psychological evaluation at NSA only 9 months prior, and it was given, the everything's clear, this guy's fine. As I've every psych eval I've ever had in my entire career that has said I'm fine. So 9 months later, when they decide, all right, we've got to find a reason to fire this guy, the very same office at NSA sends me to their special shrink, who declares under what's called a special evaluation, that wasn't a routine evaluation, to declare me to be nuts. Then I went to another NSA shrink, and he said I was perfectly fine. Then I went and paid for my own shrink, and she said I was perfectly fine. So I had, and there, I knew another shrink that I was associated with, and she said I was perfectly fine. So I have all these shrinks that say there's nothing wrong with this guy, but this one hatchet man, who of course NSA says, well, we're going with his opinion, and that's what he is. He's a hatchet man. His name is John Michael Schmidt, and when I went to the Maryland Board of whatever examiners and put in a complaint, of course a Republican was sitting in the governorship in Maryland at the time, which is my home state, and I filed it all, and then they sent me a letter that said, we're not even going to investigate this, and we don't have to tell you why.
And, well, Peter and the listeners, so that you know, Russ is not the only person with this case and with this particular doctor. I met with three other NSA employees, former and current employees, who had gone through the exact same experience with this infamous Dr. Schmidt.
Well, And this, now I do understand the compartmentalization of secure organizations, but we also have to allow for human beings and for constitutional rights. And when you took your pledge of secrecy to work in these various agencies, Russ, did you give up any constitutional rights?
Well, first, now here's the thing. When you say pledge is something that's spoken. The pledge that I take is the standard pledge in government to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. That was my pledge. Now, when you are read into these programs, and I've been read into so many black programs that I can't even come to think, you know, clearly of. As a matter of fact, I was told how many I was read into. I've been read into 219 black world programs mm-hmm. in my career, which is astounding for one person, by the way. So when you read into these programs, you read it through and you sign something that says that you will not divulge, you know, the information that you've learned in this program. So it's sort of, you know, your pledge is to support and defend. You're signing individual programs and your general clearance at a TSSCI level, special compartmented information. At that level, you also sign something that says you're not going to give up classified information. But ultimately, when a program violates the law and the Constitution, under executive order, that program classification is ultimately null and void, because the Constitution trumps any illegal and unconstitutional classification that's stamped on any program.
Well, that brings us to this whole issue of obliging with this secrecy, and I signed those papers too. Okay, and I also know our rights under a law that says the executive branch shall not classify criminal information that it has committed to cover it up, or embarrassing information. So that law actually takes precedence over the secrecy and all those documents that we have signed. So if you're in that position, okay, and Russ, this is actually a question because I really don't know the answer, and you know that the program is illegal, you know that the program is not constitutional, you know that the program is against the interests and the liberties of this nation, well, then do you test that and say, well, they say it's classified, and it's kind of arbitrary because the executive branch is in charge of classification, yet the conduct is illegal. Why is it that a lot of us are complying with this illegal classification, which has been actually nullified based on an existing law that says thou shalt not classify criminal conduct by the executive branch or the embarrassing information? So how do you explain that, Russ?
Well, first, it's not a law. It's an executive order. It says that. So ultimately, the ability to counter that and say, you know, this violates the law and the Constitution, and I'm going to step up and I'm going to say something about that, ultimately, your fate depends on the integrity of the executive in the big White House. If the executive has no integrity, you're probably going to find yourself in jail and no one's going to help you.
No, but first you're going to end up in court, okay? That means you have to bring before the judge this information, and if they have brought criminal charges against you, then it's going to be harder. Well, they are still doing it, the government, the executive branch today, for them to say, oh, it's all classified. If they are bringing criminal charges to jail you, then you get your opportunity to present the court, the jury, because it's criminal. It's not the same as the administrative lawsuits that we have dealt with, and say, okay, here are these documents that shows that these operations, or what I reported, was in fact illegal against the Constitution. And then it becomes up to the members of the jury to decide whether or not that information was, not qualified to be classified. But it goes before the court first, and it goes to the criminal court. And if it goes to the criminal court, it's not the same dog and pony shows that they have had with us, because then you have the access to the whole jury, not?
Well, I think it would be exactly the same problem that you had. you know, why wouldn't they tell a criminal judge or jury this, you know, the state secret privilege thing that they did in your case?
Because I've been trying to go to the criminal court, and they are not taking me there, because that was not the criminal court. That was the federal court under employment and the First Amendment, and actually that lawsuit was brought by me. But 2 years ago, I came and declared publicly, I said, okay, with the mainstream media and under two main conditions, I'll be willing to go and tell the American people what the Department of Justice and the State Department have been hiding under the state secret privilege. Of course, nobody is willing to do that within the mainstream media, because I was prepared to say, fine, you take me to the criminal court, okay? Because I have never been to the criminal court. Then they can't really use the state secret privilege, because if they use it, they have to drop the charges. And if they don't use it, I get the chance to show the documents, to show the court, the public, the jury, documents that says, no, this information is not state secrets privilege. Criminal conduct by the State Department and Pentagon between the years 1996 and 2002. That's a different story, isn't it?
Well, you know, in concept, you could think of it that way. But in reality, I have a feeling you'd end up with some sort of kangaroo court scenario and some sort of kangaroo court judge.
Exactly,
be hell bent
on. We have problems with our courts today. You're right. Absolutely right.
So you know, it's like I said. You know, when you have no one in the judiciary, no one in the legislature, and no one, of course, the executive that's willing to back you up, and the press themselves not doing their job, the poor guy or gal who's trying to get the word out is going to be crucified, and no one's going to shed a tear.
Well, I have one last point on this, though. Another problem we are facing, I believe, and I don't know if you agree with me or not, is the fact that we are the minority. If we had 50 people from the NSA dare and come out and challenge this, do you think it would be as easy for them to shut them up, all 50 of these people, or to bring criminal charges against all 50 of these people? Of course, when they can single out, because then there's only one Russ Dice from the NSA. Can you name another whistleblower from NSA, Russ Dice, today?
No, I cannot. Now, here's the thing. I've been in contact with folks, and believe me, NSA and the FBI have done everything they can to find out who my contacts are inside the agency. Now, they haven't been able to find that out because I've been pretty smart the way I've made my communications. But, you know, I've practically begged these folks to you know, put on their armor and help me, you know, come in the cave with me to fight this dragon. And, you know, all of them, you know, they don't mind, you know, giving a little bit of information and clapping as I walk in the cave, but none of them will walk in with me. So it's, you know, yes, there are lots of folks, but all of them use me as an example as to, you know, they can't have their careers and lives destroyed. You know, and you know, we see what happens to most whistleblowers. I mean, they end up divorced. They end up, you know, their careers are done. They end up paying all their savings for some lawyer who's going to do basically nothing for them. So, you know, if we have no protections, which you brought up earlier, and how could I argue with them? You know, when they give me a rational like that, I can't say, gee, you know, I can't get upset at them.
Exactly.
And Russ, do you see this as a I describe it as a kind of warp of the Constitution that I see the imminent cause, the so-called GWAT, the global war on terror that is undefined and limited to any specific targets or governments and open-ended. And I'm just curious if you feel that this is a short-term anomaly that will self-correct. Or is this kind of, you know, a decline that started well before 9/11 and that has just accelerated because of these other factors?
Well, things like state secret privilege, that was, what, 1952? You know, and that was an outlandish thing to happen. But all these, and of course, other things that have happened that are being used because no one has stood up to stop them, and you know, even after the church committee, where you don't hold people accountable, and these same people come back in the Bush administration, and they stretch the envelope even more because they know they weren't held accountable in the past. You're continuing to hold a precedent, and then you're pushing the line farther and farther and farther because no one's being held accountable. And yes, this, as far as I'm concerned, this has happened before 9/11. But with 9/11, once you added that fear factor in, that the Orwellian fear factor that shocks the people and basically makes them complacent, or just, all right, you know, I'll give up all my rights, but, you know, but please protect me. You know, we're setting the precedent now that is a smoking gun in the future that some president, maybe not this one, is going to pick up that smoking gun. He's going to put it to the heads of the American people, and we're doomed. Our Democratic Republic is doomed unless we take that smoking gun away from them, and we're not doing that.
So can you offer our listeners here any steps, any efforts that we should be undertaking? Clearly, I'd like them to support you in your efforts to be heard. And also, I believe that you're due compensation for wrongful termination and the smear to your reputation. But beyond your own situation, Russ, what should people be doing to try to correct this situation before it reaches the point that you just described and before all of us frogs have been boiled?
Well, first of all, they need to hop to the swim to the side of the pot and hop out of the boiling water, and wake up, and then they need to demand from our politicians that first of all they know what happened, and second of all that the people that committed these crimes against them, the American people, are held accountable. And I'm talking about, you know, things like the FISA law. Said that even one incidence of wiretapping, illegal wiretapping against Americans, you can go to jail for 5 years. So if we've had, say, I don't know, a million incidents of wiretapping, that means, you know, someone should, you know, get 5 million years as a sentence, maybe commuted by half, you know, to be, you know, nice.
Mm-hmm.
But someone needs to be held accountable. When you take a politician and throw him in jail, or the CEO of a company and throw them in jail, other folks down the line say, hey, I just saw Fred, get carted off. Maybe it's not a good idea for me to think about doing this later on. Unless the people demand accountability and demand to know what happened, we're lost.
Russ, you're the first and the only publicly known NSA whistleblower, period. I'm honored to know you, and I really want to thank you for joining this show. And I want to say one other thing, and this is the advice that Dan Ellsberg, my good friend and a mentor, was trying to give me years ago, and it took me a long time to arrive at the same point that he was, and he was trying to wake me up to that fact, and that is, people, come forward. You don't have to do it overtly. You want to make the information public, do it. As Russ said, you have no protection, but that doesn't mean you can't do it. There are ways to do it, and just do it. Do the right thing. So thank you very much, Russ. Thank you.
Well, Sabelle, it's been my honor to know you, and you have been forefront and not only, you know, objecting to this, but stepping up and organizing folks, and it's basically my honor to be associated with your organization. And you know, I really didn't become a whistleblower by choice, but I've met a lot of good people, and I'm still relatively a conservative person, and I've met a lot of folks that are considered progressive, but what I've noticed, and albeit I have a lot of arguments with other things that, you know, we would disagree on. But these are all good people that want to protect our Constitution. And it's all these folks that need to get together, no matter what their political, you know, leanings are. I think everyone, you know, believes that we should respect our Constitution, and that ultimately has to bring us back to reality and save the day.
Russell Tice, thank you for joining us today on The Boiling Frogs.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Sabelle, that was a fascinating hour with Russell Tice. He really has a lot to say, and I hope people understand the way he extends our metaphor of the boiling frogs.
No, you're right. He did a great job, and I just can feel my blood boiling again because it just brings back all those memories, whether it's the courts as a whistleblower to go through that journey, whether it was the Congress, and that was another really, really bitter experience for all of us because, yeah, we did, you know, those activities individually, but with the organization, we spent a lot of time, Peter, going to these offices, you know, on the both sides, and especially till 2006, it was mainly with the Democrats, because at least they were encouraging us mm-hmm. to come forward, and they were giving us all the promises, which was more positive than what Republicans were doing. They were basically slamming the doors shut in our faces. But it just brought all that back, and you know, Russ said, you know, he tries not to, you know, get angry and to control his temper. And sometimes I feel like it's just impossible mm-hmm. because, you know, he's right. You know, you're going to go before the kangaroo courts. I mean, look at our courts and how they have been ruling. And the last hope we had was the judge in San Francisco, and with the state secrets privilege, we saw where that went.
Yeah.
You know? And with the executive branch, the IG offices, the inspector general's offices, come on, with no independence. And with Congress, well, the story with our Congress has remained the same. It hasn't changed even a bit.
Well, and Sabelle, that's one of the most chilling aspects of what we just discussed. And you and Russ both strongly suggested that at least some members of Congress are compromised. And whether they've been subject to blackmail over illicit relationships, or they have been subject to some sort of intimidation because of intercepted telephone calls or emails or other communications. That strikes at the core of our democracy. And this is where we do see the creep toward a police state and the sense that there's nobody who has the independence, the courage, and the stature to take on these powerful agencies and really challenge any illegal behavior.
Yeah, the fear seems to be ruling, and that's the unfortunate part of it. And the other thing that Russ mentioned that is also noteworthy is that, yeah, I understand we are maybe not there exactly. Maybe we are there, but the degree of it is debatable. But the other aspect of it is that, well, maybe they see that these voices are so isolated. Well, you know, you have one Russell Tice from NSA, and you have one Peter B. Collins here, and maybe another one there, and a couple of Sabelle Edmonds from the FBI, and they are not that bothered. They have it under control, because we haven't gotten far with anything, whether it was the court or the Congress or anywhere else, and of course with the mainstream media acting as their extension. So maybe it is the police state, and they don't have to worry about it, which is even scarier, Peter.
Yeah, it certainly is.
You know, in the many countries, you go to jail because they're afraid of your voice, because they're afraid of your activities. Maybe this says they are not afraid because they know how to marginalize you and they know how to quash that voice so it won't reach the masses. Whatever it is, it gives them the confidence that they don't even have to put you in jail or execute you.
Well, and it becomes mind-numbing because they control our perception of what's real and what isn't. And so for them to create the perception that Russ Tice is crazy as a way of marginalizing him and eliminating any challenges that he might pose, it just sends a real alarm signal to me that we may have already crossed the threshold that we fear.
So do I, Peter. Left. Cohen and the future. The future. Well, that depends on us. Thank you for joining us. We'll be back soon with more Boiling Frogs interviews. Until then.